I added a couple of things to my fuck it list recently, and one of them involves a lake. It just feels like the opportunity is being presented to me right now.
What do you mean, involves a lake?
Go skinny dipping in a lake at night. I'm never at a lake at night. God knows when it would happen again. This just feels like fate. But I don't want to freak you out if you'd prefer I didn't do it.
You seriously didn't just make that shit up? That was really on your list?
I swear. He shocked me when he said.
Then I think you should do it.
Really?
Yes, it would be the most fitting ending to this bizarre night.
Do you think anyone will venture down this far? I wouldn't want to get caught.
I doubt it, but make it fast. I'll stand guard and I won't look.
You're really encouraging me to do this?
Call me insane, but I need all the distraction I can get tonight, even if it comes in the form of your crazy. I don't feel like going back to the party yet, so we might as well pass the time. I'm turning around now.
His back faced me. I squealed in delight as I swiftly got out of my clothes before jumping into the water, which was surprisingly warm. Once my body was immersed, I called out, "Safe to turn around!" Reed stood with his hands in his pockets as he watched me bounce around the water. He didn't move from his spot and kept his eyes on me, occasionally looking back to make sure no one was coming. I yelled over to him, "See? That's one of the differences between a fuck it list and a bucket list. The spontaneity factor. The fuck it list is more spur of the moment. Part of the mantra of the fuck it list is that if the opportunity comes to you, you need to take it. And that's what I'm doing." It felt exhilarating to be naked at night on this property. It was also thrilling because it seemed so naughty, given that Reed was standing just feet away from me. My nipples hardened at the thought. I was proud of myself for seizing the moment. I likely wouldn't have considered doing something so spontaneous during the time I was engaged to Todd. In that sense, surviving the breakup had not only made me stronger, but also more adventurous. After I'd had my fill, I said, "I'm coming out!" Reed turned his back to me. I slipped my dress back on over my wet body while the reality of what I'd done started to sink in.
"How do we explain why you're all wet?" he asked.
"I don't know. How are you going to explain it, Reed?" I grinned impishly.
"You're going to put this on me, darling? Is that a challenge?"
"If you want to take it." When we arrived back at the party, thankfully, it seemed Allison had left the premises. People were looking at us, confused, particularly Max and Jared. Everyone was perplexed except for Iris, who was beaming.
"What on earth happened to you, Charlotte?" she asked.
I looked at Reed and waited for his response, trying my best not to lose my shit. He finally answered his grandmother's question.
"Charlotte and I took a walk to discuss business. She sees this squirrel run right into the lake. It was dark and the rodent was flailing its little arms and legs for dear life, trying to stay afloat. She then decides to go and pull a Charlotte. Didn't even think twice, jumped right into the lake and saved it. Set it free, saved its life."
Reed deserved an Academy Award because he delivered that ridiculous story with unwavering seriousness.
"Charlotte, you never cease to amaze me," Iris said.
"Yeah, she's pretty amazing,"
Reed smiled. I kept waiting for him to add something to ruin that sweet sentence. Something like, "pretty amazing for a crazy person." But he never did. I felt like I owed Reed big time. He'd assisted me with my lake jaunt and played along so well after. Now that I knew how great it felt to knock that first item off my list, I was even more motivated to start helping him with his own bucket list. The following Wednesday, I stayed at the office late to research choirs in the state of New York. It felt like I'd hit the jackpot when I stumbled upon the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir. I immediately sent an email to inquire as to whether they were accepting new members. The choir director returned my email right away and provided me with some dates for their upcoming open enrollment tryouts. Printing out all the materials, I wondered how Reed was going to react. When I got to his office, he wasn't there, so I left all the information in a folder on his desk with a note that read, "Paying you back. Let's do this." The next morning, I got to the office early to find another blue note from Reed sitting on the center of my desk. Anytime I'd see the stationery, it would give me goosebumps and remind me about discovering that blue piece of paper inside of the dress. I eagerly picked up the note and read it.
Dear Charlotte, do you know why squirrels love you so much? Because you're nuts. Reed.
I shook my head and whispered to myself. These are the kind of love notes you're doling out now, Eastwood? I laughed. More like a hate note.
Chapter 15. Reed. I hadn't planned on showing up. At least, that was what I'd told myself. The fact that I'd set up an appointment with a prospective seller in the Cobble Hill section of Brooklyn had nothing to do with open tryouts going on 12 blocks away the very same day. My meeting happened to end at 6:30, and driving up Smith Street took me right past a certain massive church. Next thing I knew, I had parked and was following a herd of people like a mindless sheep. "Welcome to the Tabernacle," an older man at the entrance handed me a brochure with a warm smile. "Talent is a gift from God. Sharing it here is your gift back. Good luck tonight." While the inviting gesture should have made me feel at ease, it made me feel the exact opposite. I wanted to run the hell out of here. But since I'd come this far, I tamped down the urge to flee, took a seat in the very back row, and watched all the excited faces pile into the front pews of the church.
"Mind if I sit next to you?"
The guy who'd greeted me stood in the aisle at the end of the pew I sat in. I glanced around the church. There had to be 30 completely empty rows in front of me. He read my face.
"I like to sit next to the door in case there are any interruptions or latecomers that make a ruckus."
I nodded and slid over in the pew to make room. It was after 7. People had stopped piling in, but auditions hadn't started up yet.
"You knew? Don't think I've seen you around here before."
I just stopped into, what the hell was I doing here? To check things out.
"So you don't sing?"
"No. Yes. No. Yes. I mean, I used to. A long time ago."
He nodded. "What made you stop coming to church?"
I hadn't said I'd stopped coming to church. I'd only implied I once sang and didn't anymore.
"How do you know I don't go to a different church?"
He smiled.
"Do you?"
I couldn't help but laugh a little.
"No, I don't."
He motioned to the back pews.
"When people first come back after a long absence, they tend to sit in the back rows."
I nodded. "Makes the escape easier."
"How long's it been?"
"Since I sang?" He shook his head.
"No, since you've been to God's house."
I knew the answer without having to think about it. The last time I'd stepped foot inside of a church had been with Allison. We'd gone to Mass before our scheduled meeting with the deacon. It had been 2 weeks before our wedding day, and we'd given him the readings and song choices we'd picked out for the ceremony. Ironically, the day we'd gone to God's house had been the night that she'd chosen for her come-to-Jesus moment. "It's been a while."
"I'm Terrence." The man extended his hand. "Welcome back."
"Reed," I shook. "And I'm not sure I'm actually back."
"Every journey begins with the first step. You planning on trying out for the choir?"
"I haven't made up my mind yet. Figured I'd watch tonight and see how things go." "There's a second tryout night next week, isn't there?"
"That's right."
The church doors opened, and a guy in a maintenance uniform walked in. Spotting Terrence, he said,
"Got an issue with the boiler in the basement. Could use a few hands to help me move the file cabinets that Miss Margaret made us store down there. They're blocking access to the system."
Terrence nodded and turned to me.
"A volunteer's work is never done around here."
He stood and patted me on the shoulder.
"I hope you find what you're looking for."
A few days later, I still hadn't decided if I was going back for the only other audition night at the Brooklyn Tabernacle. But when I went into my online calendar, I noticed that an appointment had been booked for that night. The scheduler showed that Charlotte had entered the appointment, although the only information on the blocked-out time was a bunch of letters that spelled nothing. SFBGITS. I picked up the phone and called her extension. She answered on the second ring.
Bonjour, Monsieur Eastwood. Je peux vous aider.
What the... Charlotte?
Oui.
Then it dawned on me. When I'd stalked her fuck-it list online the other day, learn French had been added. I'd seen her in the break room earlier, eating her lunch with earbuds in while mumbling to herself. Now it made sense. Well, sense for Charlotte Darling. She'd been listening to phrases and practicing speaking them. Luckily, I'd taken some French myself.
Ne tenez-vous pas la langue anglaise assez?
Translation, don't you butcher the English language enough? I covered the phone and chuckled because I had no fucking clue if my own translation was even correct. She responded,
huh?
I chuckled. That's what I thought.
I'm still learning.
I never would have guessed.
Shut up. Did you call for a reason, or did you just get the urge to poke fun at someone so you automatically dialed my extension?
Actually, I called for a reason. You just make it so easy to poke fun.
What did you want?
There's an appointment on my calendar for Wednesday at 7. It's labeled SFBGITS. Do you know what that is?
Of course. SFBGITS, sing for the big guy in the sky.
I wrote it in code so no one would figure it out except us. I shook my head. Except you, you mean?
Whatever. Are you excited? Have you been practicing?
I'm not auditioning, Charlotte. Even if I'd decided to do it, there was no way I'd have let her know about it. I hadn't sung in years, and the people at those tryouts were really good. I doubted I could even make the cut. Besides, if by some long shot I did make it through tryouts, I envisioned her sitting in the first row of every performance. She'd probably invite the entire office staff and a few janitors I've never met from the building, too. I could imagine the pout on her face when she spoke.
Why not?
Just because I made the list doesn't mean I'm planning on attacking it like it's a race.
Oh.
She was quiet for a moment.
Then again said, why not?
Just take the appointment off my calendar, Charlotte.
Fine.
After I hung up, I felt slightly bad about being a dick toward her. So I opened up her calendar, called up all her appointments and reminders for the next week, and began to translate them all from English to French for her to work through. One appointment read, Iris flight landing at 5 p.m., call to confirm at 4. So I translated it to,
Le vol d'Iris a trahi à 17h. Appelé pour confirmer à 16h.
Then I decided to add a few tasks of my own for her to do.
Prendre rendez-vous avec rétréci.
Translation, make appointment with shrink. At least, that's what I attempted to write. Another reminder she had read, Victoria's Secret sale ends. Order new unmentionables after getting paycheck. I laughed out loud at that one. Charlotte was definitely the only 20-something-year-old I knew who would use the word unmentionables. I gave her a good translation for that.
Commander de pantalons et de soutien-gorge.
Order granny panties and support bras. I was enjoying myself, getting into screwing with her, until I came to the next appointment. Blind date at 9. An unexpected anger bubbled up inside of me. Even though I had no right to feel that way, it didn't cool the burn in my throat. Some asshole was going to take full advantage of Goldilocks. I wasn't jealous. I was protective. Deep down, buried underneath all that crazy, was a woman who believed in fairy tales. Her asshole fiancé had been dipping his pen in the company ink at the place she worked, and Charlotte still posted shit on Facebook like, just keep swimming and create your own happiness. Some people never learn. She wouldn't see that her knight in shining armor was an asshole wrapped in tinfoil until after he screwed her over. And it pissed me off that she was so blind. That feeling became immeasurably worse when I realized that her little Victoria's Secret shopping spree likely directly correlated to her big blind date. Leave it on my desk. I'd been out without looking up. I'd smelled her walk into my office, and that only served to irritate me even more, that I knew her scent, that I liked the way she fucking smelled. Charlotte placed the report she'd been working on for me down and turned around to walk out. Only she stopped in the doorway.
Did I do something wrong, Reed?
I'd been giving her an attitude for a few days, since the afternoon I'd made the mistake of opening her calendar. Nope, just busy. Can I get you some coffee or something? Nope. I motioned to the door without looking up from editing the brochure I was working on. But you can shut my door on your way out. After my door clicked closed, I tossed my pen on the desk and sat back in my seat. The goddamn entire office smelled like her now. A few minutes later, I was still unable to concentrate, so I opened my laptop and fired off an email to my annoying assistant. To Charlotte Darling. Subject, you. I would be most appreciative if you could reduce the quantity of perfume that you bathe yourself in. My olfactory receptors set off my allergy sensors 20 feet before you arrive in a room. Besides, a woman wears subtlety best. Getting that off my chest, I was able to return my focus to actual work, until a few minutes later when a soft chime notified me a new email had arrived. I knew who it was from before waking my computer from the screensaver. To Reed Eastwood. Subject, your olfactory receptors. It's a shame your olfactory receptors are so sensitive. Have you tried exposing yourself to the allergen in order to desensitize the effect? Perhaps it might help if on occasion you would stop and smell the roses instead of trampling on the garden. The world is filled with bouquets of women. Besides, a man wears manners best. The next evening, before I left for the night, I stopped by Charlotte's office to drop off some receipts so she could prepare my monthly expense report. It was nearly 8, and I'd assumed she'd left already. Her voice stopped me right before I reached her door. "And what's the price of a sleeper cabin?" Quiet, and then, okay. And how big are the beds in the cabin? More silence. "Wow. You don't have something to fit too? Maybe a queen or something?" She laughed. "Okay. Well, I guess that's always an option. I'm not ready to book at this time, but thank you very much for the information." I didn't want to get caught eavesdropping in the hall, but I also couldn't resist being an asshole. Strolling into her office, I dropped my expense envelope on her desk and said, "Using a company phone at work to make vacation plans. Not very professional, Charlotte." She glared at me. I found her wrinkled nose, squinty eyes, and the pink heat rising in her cheeks to be cute. Wisely, I kept that thought to myself. Charlotte picked her cell phone up from her desk and waved it in my direction. "I was using my cell phone, not the company phone, and my workday ended 3 hours ago, so technically the only company thing I'm using is this chair." I hid my smirk. "Taking a trip somewhere? I didn't realize you had earned vacation time already." "Not that it's any of your business, but I was only getting information for a train ride in Europe. I like to daydream about things I want to do, and sometimes the visual of what that looks like helps." It clicked. Under the Tuscan sun. Yesterday, she'd added, "make love to a man for the first time in a sleeper cabin on a train ride through Italy" to her fuck it list. If she knew I'd been stalking her list on the server, she'd take that to mean I was interested in being her bucket list buddy, so I didn't mention I knew what she was talking about. Instead, I chose a different path to walk, one that surely led straight to hell. Perhaps if you spent more time working and less time daydreaming, you'd be more productive and wouldn't have to stay until 8 o'clock at night. Her eyes flared wide. She stared at me for a moment, then opened her desk drawer and ripped her purse out of it, slamming it down onto her desktop before banging the drawer back closed. Shutting her laptop, she stood and tugged her purse to her shoulder. She then proceeded to march toward the door where I was still standing. Not expecting her to stop when she reached me, I took a cautious step back, anticipating getting reamed out. Instead, her eyes closed, hands raised, and her fingers frantically began typing in the air. Seriously, fucking nuts. And so beautiful when her nostrils were flaring. She hit what I presumed was the imaginary enter button, took a deep breath, opened her eyes, and walked out of the office without another word. I might have watched the sway of her ass the entire way out. We both needed goddamn counseling. Chapter 16. Reed.
After a few more days of avoiding her at all costs, it was no longer possible when Iris showed up at a business lunch with Charlotte in tow. Matthew Garamond, our CPA, my brother, and I were already seated. Even though I was annoyed at her presence, I stood when she walked toward the table. Nodding my greeting, I pulled out the empty chair next to me, while Garamond did the same for Iris. Charlotte? Actually, I'm going to sit next to Max on the other side of the table if he doesn't mind. I wouldn't want my perfume to bother your allergies. Iris's eyes narrowed. You don't have a perfume allergy. It's something I recently developed. Max flashed his annoying-as-shit megawatt smile and stood to pull out a chair. My brother's loss is my gain. He leaned toward Charlotte, closed his eyes, and inhaled dramatically. You smell amazing. I grumbled something about his unprofessionalism under my breath as the five of us sat down. It quickly became apparent that Charlotte was going to avoid eye contact with me, which I initially thought was perfect, until I realized that when she wasn't looking in my direction, it permitted me unlimited opportunity to stare at her face. She was so goddamn distracting. I had to force my eyes to pay attention to something else, so I studied our CPA. Matthew Garamond had to be 10 years older than my grandmother. His hair was silver, his skin tanned, and he always wore a tie with an American flag pin. He'd been the company's CPA since Iris had opened her doors, and the four of us got together 4 times a year like clockwork, 2 weeks after the end of each quarter. Only, we'd just had our quarterly meeting a month ago, and we never brought an assistant to these types of things. After the waitress took our drink order, Matthew folded his hands on the table and cleared his throat. So, you're probably wondering why we're getting together today. Max leaned to Charlotte and whispered, even though we could all hear him, I'm actually wondering what perfume you're wearing. I answered through gritted teeth. How about you try to keep the harassment of employees limited to when you're lying on the couch in their offices? Matthew looked between the two of us. While I sported a scowl, my comments seemed to please my little brother. Yes, well, anyway, Garamond continued. I asked Iris and Charlotte to pull this meeting together today because I, unfortunately, have some bad news to deliver. I immediately assumed he was sick. Everything okay with you, Matt? Oh, he realized what I thought. Yes, yes, I'm fine. This is about the business and one of your employees, namely Dorothy. Dorothy? I furrowed my brow. Dorothy sick? Iris took over the conversation. No, Reed, everyone's health is just fine. Why don't I start at the beginning? As you know, I've been having Charlotte compile a list of our cleaning vendors so that I could consolidate the number of partners we use and receive a bigger volume discount on services. As part of that project, I had her list all invoices paid for each vendor during the last 60 days. Okay, yes, I knew she was working on that. Well, she came across a few invoices that were paid wrong, a transposition in numbers. For example, one invoice was for $16,292, yet it was paid for $16,992. Another one was for $2,300, and it was paid for $3,200. None of them were off by a lot, all less than $1,000 each. But Charlotte noticed it on 4 different invoices, so she mentioned it to me. Now, Dorothy is almost as old as I am, and she's been with me as long as you boys have been alive, so I assumed maybe she needed stronger glasses, and I went to speak to her. My grandmother's face fell, and I knew what was coming next. She acted really strange, so I asked Matthew to look into some of the transactions. Garamond picked up where grandmother left off. I did an audit of her transactions over the last 12 months, and found that she'd transposed numbers on 53 different invoices. Like the ones that Charlotte found, they weren't very big mistakes, and at first glance seemed to be a simple transposition of numbers. But the errors were never in our favor. In total, those 53 payments were overpaid by more than $32,000. When I dug a little deeper, I found that each payment was being made to 2 different accounts. The right amount was going to the vendor, but there was a separate ACH payment being made for the difference,
and all of that was funneled into one account. I exhaled a deep breath. Dorothy has been skimming. Garamond nodded. Unfortunately so. I haven't gone back to the beginning of time, but it's been going on for at least the last few years. Jesus, Dorothy is like family. Iris had tears in her eyes. She has a sick grandson. Swallowing that news, I tasted salt in my throat. Charlotte chimed in, her own eyes about to overflow. Choroidal metastasis. It's extremely rare in children. She's been taking him to Philadelphia for experimental treatment that isn't covered by insurance. I had no idea. The mood of lunch took a drastic turn after that. It was one thing to catch an employee stealing, but entirely another to catch a long-term one who had a damn good reason. We all agreed we needed to give the situation some thought and that we'd reconvene at the end of the week to discuss how to handle things. At the end of lunch, Iris turned to me. I have an appointment uptown. Could you give Charlotte a lift back to the office? Max responded, even though Grandmother hadn't spoken to him. I can give her a lift. It's a Tuesday. You don't usually come to the office. I buttoned my suit jacket. Don't you have a massage or some other pressing business to attend to? My brother slipped his hands into his pockets and rocked back and forth on the balls of his feet. Nope. I'm free all afternoon. We already had embezzlement going on at the office. The last thing we needed was a sexual harassment suit. I put my hand on Charlotte's lower back. We have actual business to discuss, so we'll see you back at the office. Neither of us said a word for the first 5 minutes of the drive back downtown. Eventually, I broke the ice. Good job picking up on that check inconsistency. She stared out the window and sighed. It doesn't feel so good. It feels pretty lousy, actually. It's never fun to discover that a person you've trusted has betrayed you. I know. Believe me, I know. But it's Christian that I feel badly about. Christian? Dorothy's grandson. He's only 6. And the cancer isn't just in his eye. He spent months sick from the treatment of a tumor in his lungs, only to have it metastasize to his eye. He should be playing peewee baseball instead of being home-tutored and living in hotels with his mom while she desperately runs around like a guinea pig. I caught myself rubbing at a spot on my chest, but it was inside that hurt. I side-glanced over at Charlotte. How do you know so much about his illness? She shrugged. We talk. You talk? You've only been at the company for, what, 3 or 4 weeks? So? That doesn't mean I can't make friends. You know that cute little picture of him in the Boy Scout uniform on her desk? I didn't, but skirted the issue. What about it? Well, I commented about how cute he is on my second day, and she just broke down crying and told me the story. We went to lunch together a few times after that. She paused. Now I'm the person who got her into trouble. That's not on you, Charlotte. She got herself into trouble. I understand you feel badly, but you did the right thing. Charlotte gazed out the window as a moment of silence passed. She was so damn sensitive to everyone's feelings, which was admirable, but also a detriment sometimes when it came to business. Although when you're talking about a kid with cancer, all bets are off. The entire situation was horrible. What are you going to do to Dorothy? She finally asked. I glanced over at Charlotte and then back to the road. What would you do if you were in my shoes? She took some time to think about her answer.
I wouldn't fire her. She really needs the job. What she did was absolutely wrong, but I don't know that I wouldn't have done the same thing given no other alternative. People aren't perfect, and sometimes we need to balance the one wrong they did with all of the rights they've done. Dorothy has worked for you for a long time and was helping her daughter and grandson.
I nodded. We were both quiet for a long time after that. It was Charlotte who finally brought us both out of deep thought. She turned to me.
I appreciated the French translations, by the way. I never thanked you.
Thank God for Google, though, or else I might have accidentally bought granny panties for my upcoming non-existent trip to Paris. She rolled her eyes. I see you checked my work, I chuckled. And, Duriel, you're welcome.
So why did you stop the French lesson at the point where I scheduled blind date?
Trying to skirt around the question, I said, what do you mean?
You stopped translating my schedule right at that spot. It was like the second to last item, and you decided to stop right there. That was random. Is there no French translation for blind date?
Shit. How was I going to explain that one? Well, Charlotte, I stopped translating because the idea of you going out with some random man makes me feel violent. I was no longer having fun with it, so I stopped. Clenching my jaw, I glanced over at her and asked, anyway, why are you going out on a blind date? In this day and age, you have access to so many ways of meeting people. Someone like you doesn't need to resort to that.
Okay, what do you mean, someone like me?
Of course she wanted me to spell it out. Someone attractive and with an outgoing personality doesn't need to go on a blind date. It's too risky, especially in this city. You should really do your homework before you agree to meet someone.
Like you? Is that what you do?
You get background checks done on the people you date? Kind of like how you checked up on me before the Millennium Penthouse showing? No, although I would have no problem doing that. But I wouldn't be going on a blind date in the first place.
By the way, she said, I never asked. If you knew I was lying on my application that day, why did you agree to show the penthouse to me?
Because I wanted to teach you a lesson, humiliate you for wasting my time.
You get a rise out of humiliating people?
If they deserve it, yes. I could feel the weight of her staring at me. My tie suddenly felt like it was choking me. I loosened it a bit. What? I snapped.
Have you dated anyone since Allison?
Great. I was trapped in this car and wouldn't be able to escape this question. I had no desire to discuss my dating life with Charlotte. That's none of your business. The truth was, there'd been a few meaningless trysts, but nothing more significant.
Well, you seem to think that my business is your business, so maybe you should think first before offering me dating advice.
She let out a long breath.
Blind date was just code, anyway.
Code for what?
I didn't want people to know that I was going out on a date with Max, and before you say anything, I know for a fact that the company does not have a non-fraternization policy.
What? A rush of adrenaline coursed through my veins. The car came to a screeching halt as my foot hit the brakes in the middle of Manhattan traffic, a couple of pedestrians nearly getting hit in the process. What? I spewed, even though I'd heard her loud and clear. Horns were blaring behind me, but I barely noticed. She repeated,
Max and I are going out tomorrow night, and you'd better move this car before you get us into another fender bender.
She was right. I needed to pull over. Parking illegally in front of a Dean and DeLuca, I put my hazards on. It was quiet for a few moments before I turned to her and looked her dead straight in the eyes. You're not going out with Max, Charlotte.
Why not? He's Charlotte.
Her name exited my mouth in a warning tone. My ears felt like they were burning.
Yes,
she smiled. My anger seemed to be amusing her. It was like a jealous beast that could no longer be tamed had ripped its way through my body. You're not going out with Max. Without any real justification for my actions, I waited for her reaction. I couldn't articulate the reason why she was forbidden from dating my brother because I didn't even truly understand my rage. I just knew that I couldn't handle even the idea of Charlotte and Max. I was expecting a big argument, one that included her insisting that I had no right to tell her whom to date. But she surprised me when she said,
I'll tell you what, I'll cancel my date with Max on one condition.
My pulse rate began to slow down. What is it? Whatever it is, I'll fucking do it.
Tomorrow night is also the last tryout at the Brooklyn Tabernacle. I'll cancel with Max if you go.
Christ, you've got to be kidding me. Now Blondie was an extortionist. You're bribing me?
Bribery makes more sense than the unwarranted alpha male behavior you're exhibiting against me with no explanation right now, don't you think?
There was no way I was going to sit back and do nothing while she went out with my brother, so I gave the only answer I could. Fine.
Fine, you agree with my statement on bribery, or fine, you agree to go to the tryout?
Fine, I agree to go to Brooklyn, but I'm going alone. Got it?
Charlotte looked all too pleased.
Yes.
Good.
I put the car in drive and pulled out into traffic as we continued our ride back to the office. A slow and satisfied smile spread over her face as she leaned her neck back on the headrest before closing her eyes. How the hell this car ride had gone from talking about Dorothy's grandson to my suddenly agreeing to try out for the choir was beyond me. But this was typical Charlotte. Typical, annoying, insistent, sometimes clever, but always beautiful Charlotte. Fucking beautiful Charlotte. Fucking beautiful Charlotte, who was not going anywhere near my brother. I could keep her from dating Max, perhaps for now, but I had no right to dictate her life. My need to do so had to end. I needed a distraction from this woman, and I had to figure one out, and fast. When we returned downtown, Charlotte seemed to be in a rush as she headed back to her office. Meanwhile, I headed straight down the hall to talk to Iris about something that had been on my mind since we left the business lunch. She had just gotten off a phone call when she looked up at me.
Grandmother, good. You're here. I thought you might still be at your appointment.
She stood and walked around to the front of her desk.
I didn't have an appointment.
Did she forget she'd given that excuse as to why she couldn't drive Charlotte back from lunch? It was then I realized she'd likely made up having the appointment to get me to drive Charlotte. I didn't feel like getting into it with her, so I left it alone.
Did you just arrive?
She asked.
I figured you'd beat me back here. What took so long?
We just walked in. Charlotte and I ran into a little snafu. She smirked.
I see. That seems to happen a lot with you two.
Yeah. Taking a seat, I was happy to change the subject. Listen, we need to talk about Dorothy.
Yes, I haven't been able to think about anything else all day.
We need to call her out on the stealing. She can't get away with it.
I know, Reed, but
hear me out.
All right.
She looked worried about what I was going to say next. While I think she needs to know that we figured it out, I don't think we should fire her. She's going through too much, and she's been a loyal employee up until this happened. I could see how someone in her situation could act in a desperate way. People do strange things when their loved ones are in danger. She stole from us, but I don't think she meant any harm. To her, it was a life-or-death situation. A look of relief washed over her face.
I agree, and I'm happy and proud of you for seeing it that way.
From the moment I understood what was happening, I knew what I wanted to do. Iris was a charitable person and had always set a good example for me in that regard. It felt good to not only be able to help this family, but also make my grandmother proud. I'd like to pay for the balance of her grandson's treatment myself. She seemed taken aback.
Are you certain? That could be a lot of money.
Yes, I'm sure. I couldn't imagine having a child or a grandchild who was dying and not having the finances to help save them. I mean, is there anything you wouldn't do for a sick grandson?
My grandmother paused as she looked me in the eye. No. No, there isn't.
Chapter 17. Charlotte. Out of breath and frazzled when I returned to my office, I pulled up Max's cell phone number as fast as I could. He picked up on the first ring.
Well, hello. To what do I owe this?
Max, I interrupted. Listen, I need a favor. You haven't spoken to Reed since the lunch meeting this afternoon, have you?
No, I never ended up going back to the office. I went home. What's up?
Covering my chest, I let out a sigh of relief. I lied to your brother. I told him that I had a date with you tomorrow night. Max's laughter filled my eardrum.
Okay. Let me get this straight. I've been trying to get you to go out with me since day one. You turn me down every time, but you're telling people that we're dating?
Well, yes, but just Reed.
You're a trip, Charlotte. What, were you trying to get a rise out of him? You two have a strange-as-fuck dynamic.
I was trying to teach him a lesson, sort of. It's complicated. Anyway, he forbade me from going out with you.
What a dick,
he chuckled. If he mentions anything to you, will you go along with it for a little while? I'll probably tell him the truth at some point.
Anytime I can get my brother riled up and out of his funk, I'm happy to do it. Can I tell him you were the one who pursued me if he confronts me?
I'd rather you didn't. He was laughing in my ear.
Okay.
I made a bargain with Reed. It's not something I'm at liberty to talk about, but my end of the deal was canceling the date. So I'm canceling it.
You're canceling the date that never existed. Gotcha.
Yes. And thank you, by the way. I owe you one.
How about dinner next week?
You're relentless.
Can't blame a guy for trying.
After we hung up, I sat at my desk, thinking about the Eastwood brothers. Max was a carefree playboy, but he was a good guy, and I knew he cared about Reed a lot. Max was definitely the crazier brother, and some might even label him the better-looking one, depending on their taste. He was wilder, too, for sure. But in my opinion, brooding, intense Reed was far sexier. In fact, I'd never found him sexier than in his car today when he turned to me and demanded that I stay away from Max. Todd never gave me that kind of single-minded attention. It felt good to be the recipient of it. While some women would have advised me to smack him upside his head in that very moment, I couldn't help but be turned on by Reed's protectiveness. It didn't hurt that the sun was blazing into his beautiful espresso-colored eyes when he made the demand, or that the car was filled with his intoxicating Ralph Lauren cologne. My body begged for him to take that intensity out in me in other ways, but there was clearly an invisible barricade that Reed had put up between us. The next morning, I entered my office to find a blue note staring me in the face atop my desk.
From the desk of Reed Eastwood. Charlotte, congratulations on setting a precedent. See the employee manual on the server for the addition of Eastwood Locklear's new non-fraternization policy. Additionally, I would think long and hard before bribing your boss again. That's grounds for termination, too. P.S. You're late. I got my own coffee, which means it wasn't laden with too much cream for once. Try better to be on time from now on. Reed.
Fuming, I decided not to give him the benefit of a reaction, so I kept to myself most of the morning and knocked off the items on my to-do list. After I cooled off in the early afternoon, I ventured down to his office to feel out his mood and to offer moral support, since tonight was his tryout at the Tabernacle. To my surprise, a gorgeous woman with auburn hair was in there with him, not across from his desk like most visitors, but right next to him. She didn't work here, so she must have been a client. She was leaning into him and laughing at everything he was saying. Wearing those expensive red-bottomed heels and with a string of pearls wrapped around her neck, it was evident she was well off. Her body was against his as he showed her properties on his computer. The memory of walking into Todd's office and finding him in that compromising position flashed through my mind. It was a horrible feeling to be blindsided and to discover that your entire relationship was just an illusion. That experience would always serve as a reminder that things could change in an instant. The fact that I was experiencing a familiar sense of dread was very telling in terms of my feelings for Reed. We weren't even together, yet I was feeling a hint of betrayal. My stomach suddenly felt sick as I knocked, making my presence known for the first time. "Hi," I said. "I was just checking in to see if everything is still on schedule with your appointment tonight and if you need anything." Reed looked up.
"Yes, it is. And no, I don't need anything."
He then turned his attention back to the woman and ignored me. "Very well, then," I said, basically talking to the wall. Taking a few steps forward, I introduced myself to Reed's guest. "I'm Charlotte, Reed's assistant. You are?"
"Eve Lennon, a private client of Mr. Eastwood's. He's going to be showing me a few properties today."
Reed finally addressed me.
"Charlotte, while I have you, can you call ahead to Le Coucou and let them know I'll be coming there in about 15 minutes? Have them set up a table for two."
He turned to her.
"We'll go to lunch first."
I forced a smile. "Of course." After I lingered in the doorway for a bit, Reed abruptly took off his glasses, looked over at me and in the rudest tone said,
"You can go."
Was he kidding? He was giving me permission to go? How nice of him. After begrudgingly heading back to my office to make the reservation, I ventured into the kitchen for some much-needed coffee to cure my splitting headache. Still reeling from the way Reed had spoken to me, I was dropping things left and right. First the open sugar packet, then the stirrer. Iris was there and must have noticed my slippery fingers.
"Charlotte, is everything okay? You seem frazzled."
Stirring my coffee, I asked, "Who's Eve Lennon?"
"The Lennon family has been a client of ours for years. Why do you ask?"
Eve is with Reed in his office, and I got the impression that maybe there was something going on with them. She was all over him. "Anyway, it's none of my business." Understanding filled Iris's eyes.
"But it is your business, because you have to work with him every day, and you work with all facets of our lives. Reed is very much your business, Charlotte."
She paused.
"You have feelings for him, don't you?"
"Not in that way." I hesitated and let out a breath, realizing I didn't really need to put up a front with Iris. "I don't know. Things are just weird between us. All of the time. He's so hot and cold with me. I really don't understand him. You know what he said to me when I went into his office while she was there?"
"What?"
Deepening my voice, I gave my best Reed impression.
"You can go."
Just like that. "You can go. He can be so condescending." Iris seemed upset to see me so bothered by him. She nudged her head for me to join her at one of the tables. She leaned in.
"With my grandson, it's a battle between who he really is and who he thinks he should be. Between what he really wants and what he thinks he deserves. He has his reasons for how he acts sometimes, but one thing I can tell you is that Eve Lennon doesn't hold a candle to you. And if Reed is shooing you away and letting that woman near him, he's using her as a human shield from something he otherwise can't resist."
Chapter 18. Reed. I was goddamn rude to Charlotte, and it was eating me up inside. She'd left my office like a dog with its tail between its legs. She normally bit back at least once, not this time. It was bad enough that Eve had been all over me when Charlotte walked in. Even though there was nothing going on between Charlotte and me, I could tell catching me with Eve made her uncomfortable. But I'd volunteered to usher Eve around to three properties for that very reason, hadn't I? To show Charlotte that I had no interest in her, and to try to steer my dick into a different direction. After my freak-out over her date with my brother, I'd felt a major diversion was necessary. That diversion was currently trying to rub her foot against my leg under the table at Le Cuckoo. I wished I wanted Eve, because she was exactly the type of woman I needed in my life, one I knew would want nothing more from me than sex and expensive things, one who didn't want inside of my head and heart, one who didn't want anything long-term. Eve had two divorces under her belt and had no desire for marriage and kids. Perfect. But as I sat across from her at lunch, I was more than preoccupied. "So, which property are we going to see first?" she asked. My eyes met hers, but her words hadn't registered. "Hm?" she repeated. "Where are we going first?" "Right. I was thinking the Tribeca loft, since it's the closest to here." She flashed her bright white teeth. "Great." When Eve got up to go to the ladies' room, I decided to check my phone. Out of habit, I clicked on Instagram and pulled up Charlotte's profile. There was nothing new from today, so I scrolled mindlessly through photos from the past week, coming across one from a week ago that showed a shot of her television while her feet were up on a coffee table. She was wearing fuzzy slippers. The photo was captioned, "It's 9 o'clock p.m. on a Wednesday night. You know what that means? Blind date. Best show on TV." Everything started to piece together in my brain. The 9 p.m. entry of blind date in her schedule. The fact that Max hadn't waltzed into my office the first chance he got to tell me that he'd snagged a date with Charlotte.
I'd thought that was so unlike him, and I'd been too angry to even confront him long enough to feel him out. Charlotte had lied. She'd completely fabricated the date with Max to get me to agree to go to the tryout tonight. I didn't know what was worse, the fact that she'd conned me into agreeing to go, or that she'd known what kind of reaction threatening a date with Max would garner from me. The rest of the afternoon was a blur as I ushered Eve to the three showings, when all I could concentrate on was confronting Charlotte. After dropping Eve back at her condo, I slogged through rush hour traffic, hoping to catch Charlotte if she hadn't left the office yet. Her office was dark, the only light coming from a small desk lamp. Mostly everyone had left for the day, but Charlotte was sitting at her computer, looking like she was surfing the net rather than working. When she noticed me standing in the doorway, she jumped a little. "Shouldn't you be heading to Brooklyn? The tryouts are at 7. You need to head out there." "No," I said as the door latched behind me. "I won't be going to Brooklyn." Charlotte got up from her chair and crossed her arms. "I thought we had a deal." "What kind of a game are you playing with me, Charlotte?" "What do you mean?" "You lied to me." "Why?" "So you could see me lose my mind? You knew what kind of a reaction you were going to get. Is that how you get your kicks?" The guilt on her face was apparent. "How did you know I lied? Did Max tell you?" "Is he in on this too? Great." "No. I just asked him to, she lost her train of thought. I took my phone out of my pocket, opened it to her Instagram post, and placed it in front of her face. Figured it out. Blind date at 9. Plus, Max would never keep something like that quiet. He'd look for the first opportunity to rub it in my face. It all makes sense now. "I just didn't want you to miss the opportunity to try out, that's all." Charlotte's expression was filled with regret. It wasn't my intent to make her sad. I just wanted to call her out on her lie. But God, the look on her face was making me want to just forget everything and kiss her. I wanted to kiss her. I wanted to taste her lips and suck away that sour look on her face, yet I knew if there was one set of lips on this earth forbidden to me, it was Charlotte Darling's. She wasn't just a pretty face and a hot body. She was someone who wanted inside my soul, and that was never going to happen. I should have just walked out. Instead, I was completely lost in this moment. The most spectacular skyline may have been visible from right behind her, but there was nothing more spectacular than Charlotte's heaving chest, the sweat beating on her forehead, the reaction she was having toward me. Her attraction to me was palpable. We were standing about a foot apart, and her damn scent was all I could smell anymore. A long moment of silence passed. "What are you doing to me?" I muttered, the words exiting me like a hiccup I had no control over. "What are you doing to me?" she whispered. I looked down for a moment, and that's when I noticed the pink-striped Victoria's Secret bag on the floor by her desk. My voice was gruff. "What's that?" "Iris made me take a break in the middle of the day to clear my head. It was the last day of the sale, so I went shopping."
"Why did you need to clear your head?"
"Because you pissed me off."
God, she was sexy when she gritted her teeth in anger. I wondered what else those teeth could pull on. Fuck, stop. Yet I moved in closer. "Show me what you bought yourself on company time." Charlotte swallowed, then walked over to the bag. She bent down and took out the contents, removing a sticker on the tissue paper. Returning to the spot in front of me, she opened it up to show me several pairs of lace underwear in a rainbow of colors. A black lace thong with a tiny silk rose sewn on the top of the waistband caught my eye. Picking it from the pile, I held it in my hand, relishing the feel of the soft lace and imagining the black against Charlotte's creamy skin. Running my finger along the back string, I also imagined what it would look like inside the crack of her perfectly curved ass. Folding my fingers over the thong, I enveloped it, gripping it in my hand in the same way I wanted to swallow her up whole. Charlotte was watching me, almost as if in a trance. And I knew I'd taken this too far. I was her boss, and I just demanded to see her underwear. I was fondling it,
and if she looked down, she'd also see I was hard. I'd officially lost my fucking mind when it came to her. A voice of reason inside my head warned me, "Leave." I chose to listen to it. "Good night," I said as I handed her the panties and swiftly exited her office. Taking the elevator down, I seriously considered heading to a bar and getting piss-ass drunk, even though I rarely drank anymore. Instead, I drove around for a while and somehow ended up on the Brooklyn Bridge. Auditions were already halfway over when I slipped inside. Same as last time, I took a seat in the back row by myself and looked around. Over the years, I'd done a lot of business in this part of Brooklyn, so I knew the area well. I'd been a teenager when the church moved to this particular building, the former Lowe's Metropolitan Theater. I must have been about 13 or 14 when they started a big restoration on the place. Iris and I had passed by once during that time. She'd pulled over to tell me all about the building. My grandparents had come here on their first date, when it was still a theater. The way she told the story, how impressed she'd been that he'd taken her to a theater that had 3,600 seats, the biggest in the country at one time, you'd think my grandfather had built the thing. I smiled at the memory. Looking up, I could see why she'd been so impressed. Ornate, intricate designs were hand-restored on the multi-layers of ceilings, and a mezzanine soared stories high above the orchestra. I sat in awe of the architecture and all the grandeur of the building, something I hadn't stopped to do in a long time, until my attention was diverted to the front of the stage. A woman with the most incredible, powerful voice sang on stage. Damn. She could hold her own against Aretha Franklin. It made me question my sanity for even considering trying out. I was nowhere near as good as these people. Yet I sat there, content to at least watch the show. During a 15-minute break, I was sorting through work emails on my phone when a familiar voice interrupted. "You'll need these." Looking up, I found Terrence, the older volunteer whom I'd met last time I'd come, holding out some papers to me. I took them. "What are these?" "Application to the church ministry." He lifted his chin in the direction of the pew I sat in. "Scoot over. Been here all day and my old dogs need a break." I slid over to make room but held the papers he'd given me back out to him. "Thank you, but I'm not joining the church." He didn't lift a hand to take the papers back. "You have to be a member in order to try out for the choir. You'll need to do a membership class and the water baptism, but they'll let you try out if the application is in process. Just fill out those papers, I'll stamp you in, and you're good to go." "I'm not trying out." Terrence squinted. "You're not trying out, and you're not joining the church, yet here you are for the second time in a week. What did you come for, then?" I shook my head and laughed at myself. "I have no clue. Wait, actually, that's not true. I'm here because Goldilocks has me turned inside out." "Ah." A look of understanding crossed Terrence's face. "A woman. And one that makes you question yourself." I scoffed. "She makes me question myself, all right. Mostly whether I've lost my mind." He smiled. "She sees you for who you are, and it makes you want to be a better man. Don't let go of her." "It's not like that." Terrence put his hand on my shoulder. "Would you be here, sitting in this church, if it were not for her?" I thought about it. "No, probably not." "Has she made you question how you should treat others?" Dorothy instantly popped into my head. A few months ago, I'm not so sure I wouldn't have fired her. She has a unique way of looking at things, which seems to have caused a lapse in my judgment on more than one occasion. But she's an employee of mine, maybe a friend in a loose sense of the word, nothing more. Terrence scratched his chin. "What if I told you your Goldilocks was out on a date tonight with a strapping young bachelor?" My jaw clenched and Terrence's eyes zeroed right in on it. He chuckled. "That's what I thought. You're still fighting it. I bet you'll come around. And my guess is this isn't the last time I'll be seeing you in this pew either." He stood and held out his hand. "But until then, keep the application and take some advice from an old man who has learned from more mistakes than you even realize you're capable of making yet.
One man's overlooked blessing is soon another man's gain.
Chapter 19. Charlotte.
Reed Eastwood's office, how may I help you? I answered the phone via my headset and took another giant stride into my next lunge as I waited for the caller to speak. It was my lunch hour, but no one was around to answer the phone, so I'd eaten the salad I'd brought at my